This is the part that those of you who've been the other ones is my disclaimer as to why you really shouldn't listen to anything I have to say. And that is because I don't have kids. I'm not a parent. You wonder why in the world is this man standing up here, pacing back and forth, going to talk to us about parenting skills when he doesn't know what he's talking about? Well, if you say that, part of you is right. You have some legitimate, cause for saying those things. I have done some strange things, like spent a year as a house parent for 12 emotionally disturbed boys and girls as a house parent. And I think that's where I get most of my gray hair, and also a couple of chipped teeth and black eyes. And so that was not one of the better experiences in my life as far as one that I enjoyed, but it did teach me a lot. But I don't have the perspective that you have as far as parents and living day in and day out for some odd years with kids. And so that's a deficit. And so my perspective is going to be a little bit different than what yours is. And that's why I listen very intently when parents are talking to me about what's going on, because I learn a lot from you guys. And so some of the things that I'm going to be bringing in to you is from what I've heard from other parents. I've been doing these kind of things for the past 10 years. I've been doing these workshops for quite a while, and I also do counseling with teenagers and little kids and their parents. And I work as much as I can with families. It's kind of my bias in working with people. So, in getting this information together, I spent the last couple of weeks putting all the information that I had, and I made a big pile of it, like about this high in my office. And I was like, I can't bring all that stuff with me. And I was like, well, how do I narrow it down? And I figured, well, if I spent all summer here and taught one class a day all summer long, I might be able to make some inroads in getting some information across. So this is a very much of an abbreviated kind of encapsulated bunch of information that I'm going to be sharing with you. I also don't like just standing or pacing up here talking to you while you're all just kind of sitting there, because that gets boring for me after a while. I imagine, your brain kind of goes, what else is going on, what's happening next kind of stuff. So you will be involved and you will be doing some things. I believe in experiential learning as much as possible. I learn better that way, and I've heard a lot of other people do also, so we're going to try and do that. I want to read something to you. This is written by a 15-year-old kid from Durham, North Carolina. If I were born with all my knowledge at birth, I would have had said to my parents something like this. I would have said to them, as I grow, push, but do not shove. Talk, but don't scream. Teach, but do not lecture. Hold me, but do not pull me. Guide, but do not take my place. And lastly, love me without measure. Wisdom from a 15-year-old. Easily written down, but a lot harder to do. I want to go through and start to describe some of the nature of the beast, or however you want to call adolescence. I want you to keep in mind a couple things to begin with, though. First off, approximately 80% of kids that come into adolescence will come into adolescence, they'll be in it for a while, and they'll get out of adolescence without any significant problems. 80%. If you read the newspapers and magazines, all this kind of stuff, they're always talking about what problems we're having with teenagers. Well, yeah, that's part of it, but there's also a large percentage of the population that get through adolescence okay. Now, maybe not easy at times, but they're not going to have significant problems. And parents also survive too and get out on the other side. So keep that in mind, okay? That's kind of an important factor there. All right. Now, of those 80% that make it through getting to adolescence, basically you're going to come out all right. About one quarter of them, okay, about 25% of them, experience what they call serene development. They grow and change gradually with remarkable ease. Okay? All you're praying for those kids, I hope. Okay? Okay? About one-third develop in a manner characterized by kind of surges and stops. Kind of jumpy at times. They can be at one time very much like an adult, And later on that afternoon, be very childlike, and you're like, what is this kid that I've got here? About one-fifth experience turbulent development. Their behavior is stormy, but not abnormal. Okay? And then, about one-fifth don't fit in any of those categories at all, and they don't know where to put them. So, you might have a kid in that category also. Now, let's see. I want you to come up with some words to describe adolescence. Those of you that have them, keep them in mind. Those of you that got them, they're starting the adolescence. Those of you know adolescence, whatever. What are some words to describe, in your mind, what adolescents are?
Vitriolic.
What?
Vitriolic.
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 Stormy. How do you spell that?
Stormy.
V-I-T.
R-I-O-L-I-C.
V-I-T-R-E.
Someone told me if you write sloppily enough, you're not quite sure if you misspelled it or not. Okay, about cocky. Okay, and you're saying also like squirrely?
No, stormy.
Oh, stormy.
Another word for stormy.
Okay. Okay, let's see if we can summarize this. These are the kids you're going to live with. At times they're scared, vitriolic or stormy, cocky, sensitive, feelings are hurt easily, they're infuriating, compromising, immature, invincible, inconsistent, emotionally lots of ups and downs, they might be quiet spoken, conforming, hungry, they're growing, secretive, insecure, testy, mouthy, hormones are kind of controlling them at times, they're rebellious, affectionate, and they're physical.
Hungry?
Yeah. That about cover it? Now, how many of you, knowing this right now, would have thought of this when you had that sweet little baby in your hands? Okay?
You really don't hurt people.
Ah, what can I say? The thing that occurs is that, when you bring that baby home, there's this tiny little bundle of living thing that's your child, where it is 100% dependent upon you for its existence. Not just, physical feeding, but also, emotionally, that kind of contact and love. And without you, this kid would never have been able to survive. Maybe someone else could have taken care of it, but, you were there to take care of this kid. Now, they're growing up. And as they're getting older and older, they start to make some changes. Okay? Now, when's the biggest growth spurt for a person? Do you know?
Infancy,
okay? First couple of years. Second one is? During puberty. Adolescence. Okay? So, think now. You've got this person at home, your child, and all of a sudden they start to grow. Alright, talk about hungry, bottomless pit, inhaling food. You just go to the grocery store and the next day look at the refrigerator, it's like, or you got a kid that stands in front of the refrigerator wide open, looking inside, that's full of food, and they say there's nothing here to eat. It's like they're just continually eating. Alright? So you've got a big they're growing in many physically in lots of different ways. It can be extremely awkward for a teenager. Okay? Suddenly their feet are too big for them. They're tripping over everything. Extremely embarrassing for them. Okay? It's the shoes you buy for them last only for a few months and they're not wearing them out anymore because their feet are too big. They complain their feet hurt and they find out their shoes, their feet have grown a whole other size. I'm like, my gosh, what's going on here? Height-wise, getting bigger, bigger than you? Okay? Where it used to be, this small child is now your height or maybe bigger. So lots of physical changes are going on. Okay? A lot of
the change as far as their hormones, you know, cracking, their voice starts cracking and, you know, starting to get facial hair and starting to develop sexually. And all this kind of stuff is going on with teenagers. And sometimes it scares the heebie-jeebies out of them if they don't understand what's going on. Right? So, that's going on as far as you got the physical kind of changes. You got emotional changes. Well, all of a sudden, they've got these feelings. They've got, you know, they feel like they're having a crush or in their love with someone. And, you know, it's like a real intense kind of feeling for them. And we may say, oh, well, you know, they just have a crush on someone or, you know, oh, who are you dating this week kind of stuff. But to teenagers, ooh, you're talking about some real intense feelings here. And to them, it's not just a weekly kind of thing. It's something that really, you know, kind of, again, can be very scary, but also feels very good to them. So you got some emotional kind of changes going on. But you've got also social changes are going on. Up until this time, your child may have had most of their social contacts through you, the church, or somehow related to the family. And now they're kind of going off. This little baby of yours is leaving you, wanting to go away from you. Okay? You're wanting to go do something with the family and your kid doesn't want to go. You're like, wait a minute, what is this? This kid that wanted always to go with me before now wants to go away. That separation kind of stuff. And they need to get away from you some, okay? To be able to develop some on their own. They're learning some new things, how to get along with other people. All right? The family treats them one way. But when they get out with their peers, they may find that, you know, they used to hit their brother and sister kind of stuff. Because their brother or sister maybe was littler than. They go out there and do their friends, and they want to get hit back. That's new for them. They're learning. Oh, I can't do this when I get mad at someone unless I want to get hit back all the time. They have to learn new ways of being able to interact with people. Okay? So, you got some of the social kind of changes going on. You also have cognitive changes going on inside their head. Used to be when they're little and they didn't want to do something, they just said no. And that was it. Okay? As they get older, kind of get a little bit more elaborate here. I don't want to. Now they're asking you, why? Why do I have to go to grandma and grandpa's with you? How come? They want to know why. It's not only that they don't want to, maybe, but they want to understand more. What's going on? How come you're making me going? It's boring when I go there. And they want the answers. They're trying to figure things out. They're caught very much in between wanting to understand and yet still being over here in more concrete thinking. They may think very concretely. This is right and this is wrong. Black and white. Okay? You're telling me that, you know, I have to be in by 9 o'clock. Well, how come my brother gets to come in at 9:30? It's not fair. He's a year and a half older than me. It doesn't make any difference. It's not fair. Okay? That's how a teenager, an emerging adolescent, may see things. And they want to know why. And they have a hard time sometimes understanding that changes, the gray area of things. I talk with parents, you know, we work at treating kids fairly, not equally. Adolescents have a hard time understanding that concept of fairness sometimes. They want things equal. They want to get the same allowance. They want the same privileges, regardless of, well, I may be a very cooperative kid and always do what I'm supposed to do. I wasn't when I was a kid. Well, let's pretend if I was, okay? And then I think I should maybe get more privileges or be treated differently. Or rather, I may want lots of privileges, and I may have a brother that acts up, and he doesn't get as many privileges, and he thinks it's unfair. So you have that kind of concept also going on to keep in mind. So, given all this kind of stuff, it sets the balance of the family off. You may have a family, you know, kind of, you know, balanced out. You got some ups and downs at times, back and forth. But now all of a sudden the rules are changing. Your child used to be, you know, when you're going somewhere, you know, you'd say no and your child may have listened to you. Or they may have questioned you and asked why and said, well, I said so. That's not going to cut it anymore with them. Okay? It sets the balance off, kind of tips it to the side. You're like, wait a minute, this used to work and it's not working now. Okay? You have a choice. One extreme is to give up. I have parents that come to my office and say, hey, Pete, I have tried everything I know with this child. Used to be, you know, when I said no, they listened to me. And now when they don't say, you know, when they, I say no, and they argue with me, and I come back and I just yell at them, and I tell them they have to, and they ask me why. I say, well, because I'm your parent, that's why. So they try the yelling. That's trying everything. And it's not working. So they give up. I've tried everything. I don't know what to do anymore. Now the other extreme is, a child comes in 5 minutes late from when they're supposed to, you're grounded for a week. But mom or dad, that's another week. Clamping down so tight onto that kid that they feel so bottled in that guess what they're going to do? Yeah, they're going to explode. Now, they will rebel. Guaranteed to have a kid rebel. Okay? So you wonder, what are you going to do? You know, parents are always talking about, well, you know, I'm a very strict and I'm a very firm parent and I don't believe in all this permissive kind of stuff. I'm like, good, good, glad to hear that. Because I don't agree in all this permissive kind of stuff either. And so I say, yeah, when I say it, that's the word, that's it. I said, well, that's not being strict. I said, that's almost being kind of unreasonable. They're like, what you talking about? Wait a minute now. There's another way of dealing with it. Okay? And I'm not going to tell you yet. We're going to get to that in a minute as far as we get to the limit setting. Okay, is this making sense so far? People kind of nodding heads, whatever. I've got some information written down here for you. If you want to kind of look at it. And again, it's just looking a little bit as far as, don't look at the back of it yet.
Well, which is the back one?
I'm sorry. The front of it has the chart on it.
Okay.
And the front of it has the chart here. Just to look at as far as what's going on here. Real quickly, you've got the physical changes that are going on with your kids. Okay, which again can be some, you know, can be kind of scary for them, upsetting for them. We're going through some physical changes, okay? The gray hairs are starting to spurt out here. We're worried as far as our appearance and our own mortality. So not only are our kids going through changes, but we also are going through changes. And we need to kind of keep that in line also and watch what's going on. Because this is going to upset the balance of the family. And when the balance changes, you need to change a little bit the way you deal with the family. And if you don't, you're going to stay off balance and you're going to be in that 20% that has a really rocky kind of adolescent period there to deal with. Okay, so you got physical changes, again, the intellectual changes going on there. Begin to think abstractly. You're going to be able to have deeper conversations with your kids. You're going to be able to reason with them about things. They're going to become more aware of social issues around them. And they're going to be asking you and getting to really some neat conversations with you. It can be a really exciting time. You got some of the social, emotional kind of changes that are going on. Again, you know, we're talking about, you know, ups and downs emotionally. If they're not wearing the right clothes, they may feel extremely self-conscious. All right? They may feel like everyone is looking at them, you know, unless their hair is the right way. These are important things to teenagers. Let's see. What else are they doing? Getting out more into social contacts with other people, pulling away from the family some. The rule of thumb is that when you have a teenager that starts to pull away from the family and is doing it in appropriate ways, the tighter the parents keep that child to the family and doesn't allow them to do that, the further away they will go, both physically and emotionally.
Say that one more time.
Okay. If you're my child and you know, you want to go on a camping trip and you want to go to Holden Village, I'm like, my gosh, you want to, you know, kind of stuff. And I don't let you go. You stay here, you know, you tell me everywhere you go. Kind of, I want to know who you're with at every, you know, at every single moment of your life. Okay, I'm keeping you too close. And you're wanting to go out in appropriate ways that are age appropriate. Okay? And I'm not letting you. Okay? There's going to become a point where you're going to be getting older, and I'm not going to be able to have that kind of control over you, and you're going to go. And you're going to probably go further physically away, moving away, whenever that happens. And emotionally, you're going to feel more distant from me. Okay? Kind of that, you know, the rebelliousness and resentment. Generally, if the parent and that child are able to work things out, they can come back together. Okay? I'm working now with a mother, and her son is 14 years old. And the big thing this summer was letting him go to camp for 2 weeks without her. Okay, that was a big thing. And she was like, no, she came with this list one day. Oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe the list of things. You know, what would happen? You know, what if he doesn't change his clothes? What if he forgets to take a shower? What if he doesn't brush his teeth all week? You know, and these were on her list of all these things that she was concerned would happen that she just could not imagine letting her son do these things. And so it took a lot of work of working with his mother, of getting her to realize that, okay, let him go. He's going to survive. And I prayed that he didn't get hurt, you know. And he went, and he had the best time of his life. And his mother was depressed about it because he really enjoyed himself. And so I continued. I'm spending most of my time working with his mother, helping her realize that this is what needs to take place. Need to let him do these kind of things. Okay? No. She wants to keep him nice close at home all the time. So, that's kind of what you need to keep in mind there. We're also on here. Okay, so that's kind of just, you know, a guideline for you to look at there. All right, what's next on here? Okay, limit setting. One of the biggest questions, or the most frequent questions that parents ask me is, Pete, do you think it's okay if I let my child do this or that? And I'm like, here we go again. You know, it's like, if I say yes, and it doesn't work out, whose fault is it? Mine. If it doesn't work out, and you know, and I say the opposite kind, it's my fault. But what I try to do is help the parents work at setting up their own limits within their family. Okay? I firmly believe that when I'm working with a family, that it's not my family. I don't decide the rules and the limits for that family. That family does. And it's the easy way out for them to just ask me and want me to decide for them what the limit should be within their family. Okay? So, I work real hard at backing out from that, and this is what I do with them. I help them to look at limit setting as far as in two different categories, as far as rules at home. One is called negotiable rules, and the other are called non-negotiable rules. Well, there's something glued up here. Okay, negotiable and non-negotiable. Now, what do you think the differences are?
To me, a non-negotiable would be something way past their ability to handle. I can't think of an exact example, but something that would put them in danger or something like that. They can't handle.
Okay.
I don't know if that's recognized. Driving a car.
Okay. So.
You can't drive the tractor until you're X number of years.
Okay, so that would be an example of a non-negotiable, hard and fast, okay? A non-negotiable rule is one that's not up for discussion. Non-negotiable. There's no negotiating it. This is the rule. Period. Okay? Negotiable is one that is negotiable. Okay? Make sense? All right. Let's start making a list of what you think would be some general negotiable or non-negotiable. You're talking like, you know. Okay, so you're saying those are non-negotiable. Okay, so as far as like dangerous equipment, okay. What do you think are either negotiable or non-negotiable rules?
Clothes are negotiable.
Clothes?
Yeah.
As to where you wear them or not, or?
Color. Color choice.
Style. Hairstyle is negotiable. Curfews are negotiable.
Bedtime.
Bedtime. What was else? There was another one that I missed.
Prince, sleepover.
Okay.
You know, Pete, in terms of non-negotiable, one of the issues that comes up in terms of family dynamics is how enforceable those non-negotiable rules become.
We'll get to that.
Because
yeah.
if you've got a healthy family where there's a lot of communication and you establish a non-negotiable rule, then the trust factor is that rule is going to be obeyed. For example, no smoking. Mm-hmm. Now, if you choose to smoke after you're 18 and you're away from home, that's okay. The rules are not highly enforceable, I guess is what I'm saying. But there's a trust factor there that has to happen. Yeah. Family.
That's what you have to look at, you know, non-negotiable, that becomes, you know, the mark in there as far as how do you decide on non-negotiable rules? Well, is a non-negotiable rule, can you make no smoking non-negotiable if you can't enforce it? Is it then a non-negotiable rule? No, it isn't, because if your child is smoking when they're not around you, then it's shifted over to here. They've opened the negotiations.
But then what rule is non-negotiable given the mobility and the ability our children have to be out in society and away from us?
What do you think? What are some non-negotiable rules?
Things that break the law.
Excuse me?
Things that break the law.
Okay, anything that might be illegal. Okay, well, smoking is illegal for minors.
But then there's still the same problem with enforceability because
if you don't get caught.
If you don't get caught, and even though the state may have a law against drug use, but if not caught.
All right, let me put up here. Okay, anything that's illegal.
Or time to be home.
I would tend to say like family values. Or family ethics or family values that the family has.
I don't think there are any non-negotiable rules.
I don't think.
Who said that? You did? Okay, all right, hang on to that. Someone else said something else about
being home at a certain time.
Okay.
Family standards.
Okay, I'm going to come to family values. Say some more about what you're saying about.
Well, if you can't enforce whether or not your kid is going to drive a car, you know, if they're supposed to drive when they're 17 and they can still go out and they have a friend who's a legal driving agent driving their car whether you know it or not. So there's no, even the legal things are non-negotiable, basically. Smoking, drinking, any bad stealing, any bad behavior, extremes are non-negotiable. So things like family values, things like that are certainly negotiable. The things that society is going to help you clamp down on aren't negotiable, and then I don't think anything else.
Okay. All right.
I don't know where this fits in, but the concept of, in a family, and you talked about the rigid authoritarian parent previously, if the family has a large selection of negotiable rules, it seems, and we are not far enough yet in this process to know whether this theory is right or not, but it seems as if that if they accept this body of negotiable rules, that then they, what Lynn was talking about, trust, then will adhere to the non-negotiable quote-unquote rules. And those rules are based on health and safety factors and the state laws or whatever, or religious principles or whatever. So that if there's a body of rules that are negotiable, that's big enough and fair enough and reasonable enough, then the non-negotiable are basically accepted without a lot of testing. But if you get a situation where you have an authoritarian, then all bets are off.
Okay. All of what, everything that you're saying has some truth in it, okay? If you look at, again, we're talking about adolescence, all right? Remember the cognitive thinking, questioning why, how come, why is it done this way, why isn't it done that way? How come you as a parent get to do it and I don't get to do it? How come you say no and yet you do it sometimes? Okay? Kids pick up these kind of stuff. So they're always questioning. If you work with them at negotiating what the rules are, let's say as far as like with clothes. Now when I grew up, clothes were over here. Clothes were non-negotiable. We had three sets of clothes. You had school clothes, you had play clothes, and you had church clothes. And never shall the twain mix, okay? And when we went somewhere as a family, we always asked, do we have to wear school clothes, play clothes, or church clothes, okay? And some of the most heated arguments that I got with my mother was about not being able to wear jeans to school. That was a non-negotiable, okay? Now, because of that, there was an awful lot of tension between us kids and our parents, and a whole lot of ill feelings that lasted for a long time. That was the consequence of that non-negotiable rule. It was a very high price to pay in our family. Okay? Now, if you ask my parents today, do they think it was worth it, they would say no. Okay? If they could have done it over, they would have moved that to a negotiable rule because it was too high a price to pay. For everything over here, it'll cost you. Everything over here will cost you. Everything over here gives you the opportunity to teach your kids how to monitor themselves and how to keep controls on themselves. Okay? For example, clothes. All right? Kid may want to go out and buy, you know, $150 pair of tennis shoes. And you're like, gosh. You know? Okay? And you may say, no, that's a non-negotiable because there isn't money for it. Okay, so now I put it over here, as opposed to getting to the other side saying it's going to take 4 months to save up that kind of money for those kind of shoes, and then those shoes, I won't have the money again for another pair of shoes for X amount of time. Are you willing to do that? Okay, talking to the kid, making it a negotiable. The child may think, yes, I mean, you know, if I have these shoes, you know, my life will be complete. You know, I'll have made it. And so you make it a negotiable within whatever limits that you have as a family. Okay? And sometimes you might even jot it down. All right? Just to make sure it's clear. And so you make it a negotiable. You wait this X amount of time, you save the money, the kid gets the pair of shoes. And then a week later, the style changes and they want a different pair of shoes. Okay? And you remind the kid, another 6 months, and you might be able to get another pair of shoes. Okay? You're teaching your child then negotiating kind of stuff. So it's not on you to have to get another pair of shoes, it's because of what your child negotiated with. Okay? This gives you the opportunity to teach them something. This is going to cost you. All right? There's someone that I've listened to speak quite often. Her name is Claudia Jewett. And she adopts severely emotionally disturbed, schizophrenic, multiple personality disorder kids and brings them into her family. And she used to have on this side a non-negotiable was that on your bed you had two sheets. You had a bottom sheet and you had a top sheet. And the kids that came into her house and that she adopted many times came off the street or lived in situations where they didn't always have a bed. And they, for some reason, didn't want a top sheet and they had tear it off. And sometimes they wouldn't even use it and just use the blanket. And this at that time was a non-negotiable. And you know, I had this big uproar in her house. And finally, you know, her husband sat down and said, Claudia, is it worth it over a top sheet for a bed? Okay? And then, you know, kind of became clear to her. I said, oh, it's not worth it. You know, what's the difference? All right, so the blanket gets dirtier quicker. So you wash the blanket once in a while. Big deal. Okay? Moved it over here to a non-negotiable. And she narrowed down the non-negotiables to two in her family. Number one, there'll be no hitting of each other. She allowed people not to hit each other. It's a non-negotiable. And the kids come to her family and said, you will not hit me or anyone else in this family, and I will not hit you. Non-negotiable. Okay? The other non-negotiable is that you can't deal drugs out of your bedroom window or in the house. She had a couple of kids that were running a drug deal out the window. They had this, you know, this rose trellis, and people were climbing up the rose trellis, and these kids were dealing drugs out her second-story window. And she was very surprised when the police came and busted her house. So she made that another non-negotiable. So she has two non-negotiables in her family.
And how did she enforce those?
How did she enforce them? Okay. Well, as far as the hitting, if I come up and if I'm going to threaten or hit you, what alternative do you have? Okay, you can get away, walk away. What else? Okay, that's why you're okay. All right, not sure. All right. The thing that parents don't think of as far as with physical violence, and I'm really strong that parents don't deserve to be hit, and I don't think kids deserve to be hit either, is that the alternative you have is calling the police. Say, hey, I'm being. Someone's hitting me now. I need help.
Now you have to get a charge if you call the cops now. I mean, it used to be they'd come separate people, but you would have to place a charge now.
Depends what state you're in. Yeah, it varies.
Both parties go to jail immediately. Everybody involved goes to jail. Everybody.
You say in Washington?
In Washington State.
They have to make an arrest.
They have to.
Mm-hmm.
They usually arrest both.
Do they?
New law.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what it is in Washington.
Well, I guess I'm not even taking it. Well, maybe I'm not taking it that far.
Okay.
It's the big brother that's just gotten totally frustrated with this little sister, and old mother is going to feel so good about this.
Yeah. Okay. Then you look at the area of prevention. Okay. And interventions. Preventions first, because they're easier to do. Preventing the problem from escalating to the point of physical violence. All right?
Are you calling physical violence when he just wants to hand it up? I guess that is physical violence. That seems awfully strong.
Well, to me, the point that I would call the police is when I feel physically threatened. Okay?
I'm not at that point.
Okay.
So you're talking about negotiable violence in your mind.
I get that. I'm not ready to call the police yet.
Yeah. When I was working in this group home and when a kid picked up an 8-foot couch and threw it at me, police were called. Okay. I felt very much threatened when this couch came flying at me. Okay. So then the thing is you have to look at, the non-negotiable, and looking at the intervention, how to keep things from getting to that point. You know, do you leave these two kids, are you talking about, you know, home by themselves when you're not there? Not a good idea. Taking maybe one of them with you, or the ages, however you want to work it. You do preventative kind of things. Yeah?
Well, I'm not. Just taking it a step further, it seems like your issues would be before this happened, and that there would have to be clear understanding of what the consequence was. You can't have non-negotiable rules without an understanding of what the consequence is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you look at, you know, setting those up ahead of time. Yeah.
What I also heard you doing was being upfront about consequences if those non-negotiables were broken. And I think that's really a missing link.
Yeah.
So that sometimes the consequences, when you have your informal or formal non-negotiated family rules, a child breaks it and you, out of, you know, intense anger at the moment, can put fallacious things on these kids that are really inappropriate. And if you haven't thought through ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
what's appropriate, what's not.
And enough saying, well, you'll be sorry.
That's too nebulous.
That's
yeah, that won't put it.
That's not a consequence, yeah. Okay? That's not clear enough. All right. You want to look at then getting as many negotiable as possible. Now, a word of caution. It is easier to say, absolutely no, that's it, end of discussion, go to your room. It's easier setting up these, although it'll cost you, and it'll take more time for you to deal with it later on. These are going to take a lot more of your energy to set up. It's the preventative kind of stuff here, okay? If you look at, you know, the curfew, your curfew is 9:30, period, no discussion. Well, Mom, it's a dance at church, and it's going to go to 9:45, and I won't get home to 10. If it's over here, what you're going to do to your adolescent is make them feel powerless, okay? You're not going to be listening to what's going on to them, so they're going to feel like you don't care. And you're not going to be able to teach them that rules do change at times, that there are exceptions to rules. Against the teaching kind of part. Now, you can go one step beyond that and not have any curfew and tell your kid, well, you can come in whenever you want to. That's a dangerous thing to do, just emotionally from the point of view of your kid, because without any kind of limits, we're talking about limit setting, not taking away the limits. If you have no limits for your kids, they may say they like the freedom, but it's also a very unnerving and it's a very scary thing to them not to have any kind of limits on them. It's not good for them. Okay? You know, the newborn infant, you know, they wrap them up real tight and they sleep. You know, they feel real safe all wrapped up. As teenagers, you may not wrap them up real tight, but if they don't have any kind of limits around them, as far as guidelines, they don't feel as safe, and it's not as good for them.
They aren't as safe.
Huh?
They aren't as safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, also, you know, Pete, without limits, kids don't know they're loved either, because limits become a real concrete manifestation of parental love. And the thing, yes, you read about the 15-year-old that was so wonderful at the end, basically he says, and that you'll love me sort of forever no matter what.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we tell our kids repeatedly is that there's nothing they can do to get outside of our love. Mm-hmm. That we might be angry, that we might feel sad about choices they've made, but they will never ever get outside of our love. And when we're talking about limits in our family and choices, basically, we go through the time-consuming explanation process, and it always comes down to our effort to make them understand that the limits we're setting are created out of our caring for them.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, we can get to a point where they can understand that, and they may not always agree, but they'll say, yeah, I see your point. And it's okay, they can live with it. Because they understand it's coming out of love. And one thing I want to say, we have dish teams, so we have to go in a minute. What I think is really important is that adolescents, when we had the list of the way adolescents behave, is that they're often pushing us away. You know, I mean, 13-year-old boys do not want their mothers to hug them in public. You know, that's not
in public, right.
Right, in public. But they very much, even if they don't verbalize it, need physical affection, and they need the verbal reassurances that they're loved. They need to have their heads ruffled, and they need hugs. They still need to get tucked in at night. you know, they need all of those reassurances that they're loved. And my experience has been that if they have that, then the negotiable items all become so much easier to deal with, because it's not an authoritarian, because I said so. It's because they understand that there's that real caring for them, for their whole being, for their physical well-being, for their emotional well-being. And but they won't ever ask for it. Adolescents will never ever ask, do you love me? They won't ask. They'll just hurt inside that it doesn't come to them.
Yeah.
And I think the hard part for us as parents is that we are being pushed away. And so sometimes it's hard to not have our feelings hurt and to kind of cut through that and say, hey, it's okay, I love you anyway.
Yes. Yeah. And that, again, that pushing away, and they think that, well, they don't need me anymore. They need you in a different way. They don't need you to hold their hand all the time when you go somewhere, but they do need to know that you're there. Okay? Very important kind of stuff. Make sure the limits, that you are setting those kind of limits. I got another thing for here for you. Yes, you can look at the back this time if you want to. And the front of it, again, has kind of like a chart on it real quick. And it's kind of like a worksheet to get you started as far as listing what are some of the rules that you have in your house. Now, if you're like most households, you may not be able to get all your rules in there. But then to list the priority they have and decide which ones are negotiable and which ones are non-negotiable. Keeping in mind that you want to get as many negotiable ones as possible so you can teach your kids how to limit themselves. It's an opportunity to teach them some things. Yes, it's going to take more energy on your part. It's going to be harder to do, but it's a good thing to do. On the back there, some guidelines for kind of establishing rules and limits for kids at home. Clarify which rules and limits are negotiable and non-negotiable. Let them know up front. Okay? Again, have as few non-negotiables as possible. Involve your adolescents in decision-making with what's going on. Involve them in that. It's going to make it a whole lot easier on you. When some of the families that I'm working with on vacations they've gone this summer, some of them had the most horrible time they could imagine on a vacation. And part of that was because they did not involve the adolescents in any of the decision making about where they were going and what they were going to be doing. So the entire time the adolescents were on this vacation, they were being made to do things they didn't especially want to do. And so they know how to make parents miserable, and that's what they did. Because it was a non-negotiable. It cost the parents a whole lot. Okay? So, make sure you involve them as much as you possibly can. Now, you may have a teenager that we had up here, but they don't say a whole lot. They don't put a whole lot of things into words. One of the kids from church that I spend time with and talking with him, his name is Brad. And Brad doesn't talk a lot. And there are some times, and I've been working with him for a year now, and I can tell when Brad's really having a hard time. And sometimes, when he's like sitting off in a corner somewhere in a church activity, I'll just go up and I'll just sit down next to him and I won't say a word. I'll just sit next to him. And it may take 10 or 15 minutes, but after a while, he may say what's going on. And he may say it in so few words, is you've got to listen carefully. Because he doesn't usually say it a second time, but he'll let you know what's going on. You got to spend the time then to listen to these kids.
You know, the flip side of that is that in listening, sometimes we can learn an awful lot too, because kids can be incredibly creative with their solutions or with their ideas. Like if you ask your kids when you're talking about consequences or when you're negotiating consequences, they can come up with some really good stuff about what they think will help them limit their own behavior.
Uh-huh.
You know? So we have to remember that as parents, we're learners too. We're not only the teachers. We've got a lot to learn in this process.
I'm always amazed when I'm taking a bunch of kids somewhere in my car that those in the back seat somehow think that you can't hear in the front seat what they're saying in the back seat. Always amazes me. I mean, I'll talk with them. They'll talk back, and then they'll start talking about stuff that they're doing, you know, and then they'll realize that I'm the front seat. It's really funny sometimes. But, I mean, if you listen, they'll tell you lots of stuff sometimes. Okay, have logical, sound reasons for the rules. Be willing to explain what's going on. Remember, these got to make sense, these reasons. It can't be just because I said so, or I feel like it, or I'm your parent, or whatever it may be. It has to make sense to them. And now that's going to be difficult if you've got some rules that don't make sense. Okay? Like having to wear, not being able to wear jeans to school. Didn't make sense to me as a kid. Still doesn't make sense to me. Okay? You're going to have problems with those kind of rules within your families. Okay, rules, limits, consequences should hold adolescents responsible for their behavior. Remember with the tennis shoes? Okay, the sneakers. Realizing a week after he got them that they're not the ones he wants. Consequence of negotiating the way they did is that they're going to be stuck with those shoes for X amount of time. Logical kind of consequence for that. Those are what help teenagers learn. When rules are broken, don't convey the message that the adolescent is a failure. Okay, talk about just, hey, you messed up. Okay, don't give them the message that they are bad because of what happened. All rules and limits should be realistic and attainable, considering the individual that you're working with. So you're going to have different rules for different kids in your family and different situations. And as the situations change, you may have different rules. And so it can get really complicated sometimes. But as long as you've got the lines of communication open and they're negotiable, you're going to do okay. It's when the lines of communication are not open and they're non-negotiable that you're going to have problems. Rules and limits should be open for discussion, all that kind of stuff. And if you don't have a number 9 on there, there should be another one on there that says be consistent. Inconsistency. When I've got parents and they come in and they've got a child and they're trying to change this child's behavior in some way. Usually it's a negative kind of behavior when they come in and they want to change it. Like, okay, this is possible to do. And usually they're having the problem with this child because they haven't been consistent. And we'll set up with the child, you know, the rule and the consequences. It's clear to everyone. I tell the parents, okay, now this is what's going to happen. For the next 99 times that this child breaks that rule, you have to be consistent every single time, and then their behavior will change by then. If by the 95th time the child breaks the rule and you have not been consistent, you start all over again. It's called the 99 rule. I don't know who made it up. I wish I did. I've just, all over the years I've heard it. That's how consistent you have to be in enforcing rules. Now, since we're all humans and you're not going to always be consistent and you're going to mess up, admit that to your child. Remember last night when you came in a half an hour late? Or last, you know, a couple nights ago and we didn't do anything? I messed up. That was wrong for me not to whatever enforce the consequence was. Okay? Let them know that you messed up. Otherwise, they're going to think, oh, I can get away with this every time now.
Okay. What is it in the kid's nature that makes them continue to do it 99 times?
Well, part of it is being stubborn, trying out new behaviors, doing things in a different way, wanting to do something in the same way or a different way than what you want them to do it in. And so it may not go to the 99th time.
I know, but there seems to be the one that is going to do it 99 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming, is the kid brain dead or just, incredibly tenacious?
Yeah.
Seems like they're just kids that have tenacity about the stick-to-itiveness, and it can be good stick-to-itiveness. They'll be the ones that'll complete the project at school or at work, no matter what. And it's also, from the discipline standpoint, you just have to put up with your
learning. Yeah.
Well, that tendency to repeat behavior
is not just a human tendency. I mean, rats do the same thing. The way that you get a rat to do something time after time without reinforcing them is by intermittent reinforcement at odd times. And that behavior will persist and persist and persist. So the inconsistency gives the kind of intermittent reinforcement that unfortunately reinforces what you don't want.
Yeah. Okay. Just about out of time, on the back of that other sheet, the one that I fussed at you for not looking at before, the talks about some signs of serious disturbance. You know, like when should I worry about my kid, kind of stuff. And again, some behavior that adolescents do, some age-appropriate behavior is going to be dangerous at times, but these are some of the times when you should start to worry. When they're withdrawn for long periods of time and show no interest in others, they have no friends of the same age and they're not integrated in some kind of a peer group. Now, it may not be a peer group you especially like, but if they're not into any kind of peer group, if they're very docile, never act independently, they don't initiate any kind of activities, they continually run away from home or school, if they frequently are getting into fights, physically abuse others, show unrelenting anger over minor kind of things. Not big things. We're talking about little things. If they're showing anger, that's way above board for that. If their emotional state moves from high to low, now again, remember, that's normal for it to go high and low, but if there's no kind of leveling off at all, okay, that's when you begin to worry. If they're consistently depressed, preoccupied with death or threatens or attempts suicide, if they engage in indiscriminate sex activity with a number of partners, sexual activity, if they are often drunk or under the influence of drugs, again, those kind of obvious there. And number 10 is probably one of the most common ones, lose a dangerous amount of weight, okay, either through binging and purging, you know, just not eating at all. Those are things also to be concerned about. If you do have, or if you know someone that's in those kind of situations, that's time to, you know, to contact a counselor somewhere, mental health association, mental health center, you know, the school counselor, lots of people that are available out there, and seeing, you know, asking, is this a kid that you think needs to be seen? Okay? So again, remember, 80% make it okay.
But you mean 80% are not in this category.
They can still drive you real crazy with their being this far. Oh, yes. No, I didn't say they wouldn't drive you crazy. I said they're going to make it through basically okay. Uh-huh. All right?
But will you?
Will 80% of parents make it through this?
Yeah.
That's where it's important, you know, to make sure that you take time away from your kids also. You know, you need a break. Realize that you need a break from them as much as they need a break from you sometimes.